Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session after a very busy week in the world and certainly in U.S. politics and pretty much everything. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studio. Steve, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very, very happy to be here. And I mean that more than usual. I spent the majority of the week in the hospital, as you well know.
I do.
I won't get into specific details, but it was just some stuff going on with my my gallbladder and liver enzymes and other things. Like, this is probably not known on the show, but I'm also a diabetic. So
it's come up like twice over the 5 years we've done a show together.
Right. And so, you know, like, my blood sugar was way out of control, which is bizarre for me because normally my blood sugar is very in control. You know, it was one of the reasons why I, you know, stopped drinking. Was to help make that job a lot easier. I mean, I was doing some crazy math to make that work before when I was drinking heavily. So, you know, this makes that job easier. But whatever happened, it really just threw my body for a loop and they had to keep me for a while. So it's good to be here. You know, I mean, because it sucks because of COVID, like, I couldn't have visitors. You know, they tested me for COVID. Oh, my God. Can we talk about the COVID test?
Absolutely. I got one, too.
Yeah. So if you haven't had the test for COVID, it's fucking awful. You know, so my nurse, when I'm in the emergency room, like, we have to test you for COVID. And I'm like, okay, fine. And she tells me, she's like, hey, I need you to sit on your hands. And I'm like, come again? She's like, yeah, I need you to sit on your hands. And I'm like, okay, is this part of the test? She's like, no, but you'll understand. So I'm like, all right, fine. So I sit on my hands, and she pulls out the swab. It's a really narrow cotton swab, and she jams it right up my nose. Like, it feels like it pierces the back of my brain, and if not, at least my eyeball, and it just stung like a bitch, you know? And she pulls it out, and she's like, that's it. And I'm like, okay, why am I sitting on my hands? And she's like, well, you're a pretty big guy, and if you hit me like the last guy did, I feel like it would be a lot worse. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, I'm sorry the last guy hit you. She's like, yeah, I didn't really prep him much, and he was kind of being a jerk. And then, you know, when I shot it in the back of his head, you know, it might have been a little hard, and he definitely hit me. And so I just was protecting myself. And I'm like, oh, okay. But, yeah, so that wasn't pleasant. And then, you know, just kind of being isolated like that, you know, I was kind of in and out. I got a lot of sleep, but you know, it just made you think, and it made me more appreciative of being able to, you know, interact and spend time. Like, I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time isolated because of COVID. But when you're in a situation where, you know, you're in a hospital room, you really can't leave, and, you know, everything is, you're kind of confined to a small space, it really puts some things into perspective. And you know, some of the nurses shared some of the stories that they dealt with when they worked on the COVID unit in that particular hospital. And they weren't pleasant. They were not pleasant at all. A lot of death, and just a lot of sadness. And so just kind of, you know, even though, you know, we don't like wearing masks and there's, you know, and you know, the whole thing with Trump, you know, becoming positive with COVID, but then, you know, kind of downplaying it and saying, oh, don't worry about it. You know, I mean, Trump, you've right. got all the resources in the world and the best doctors in the world taking care of you. You know, but for a lot of people, that's not their reality. And, you know, and I was kind of like right in the thick of it for a little bit. So, you know, it's very real. You know, and I've just from people, it's impacted in my life to this point, and then just again being in the middle of it, I mean, it's just something that we got to work through until we get, you know,
a vaccine,
and treatments and all that other stuff.
You know, in terms of the Trump aspect of it, that really ended up being something that I knew about because Regeneron is the company that made the monoclonal antibody treatment that he got, and that is not an FDA approved treatment.
Yeah.
And when you get something delivered to a patient or given to a patient that is not approved, the FDA term is it's a compassionate use. It's not clause, whatever. Compassionate use is a thing. And usually it's people dying of infectious diseases or cancer where literally, like, there's a treatment that hasn't been proven yet, but if you don't get it, you're basically going to die right. if you it's don't like, get something dramatic. It's like a Hail dramatic. Mary. Exactly. And the fact that he was able to get that done in 2 days indicates, well, he's the president of the United States. I actually do have a personal connection to Regeneron as a company. Just a guy I've known for 25 years works there. It is pretty high ranking there. And I hope that that treatment does do some good. I think, you know, that Regeneron is a very progressive biotech company that's done some really interesting things. And I don't talk to my buddy. I haven't talked to him in 2 years now.
Yeah.
But if he has not gotten rich off their stock, he's a fucking idiot. Because because he started there when their stock was like $30 and he was getting hired on as a director of quality level. Now he's a VP. If he doesn't have options, which the stock is now at 600 plus,
yeah,
he should be rich. I should reach out to him. But anyway, I also got COVID tested. I was feeling a little lousy and I had to go participate in something and I didn't want to expose people. I kind of went through a bit of a moral struggle because I really wanted to be part of this. It was an artistic thing that really didn't matter. And I just woke up Saturday when I was supposed to do this and said, I can't be that asshole that says me doing this stupid little thing is worthwhile for me to risk people who I don't even know without their knowledge. So I ended up getting a last minute rapid test. Now, I got to administer the swab myself, probably made life a whole lot more pleasant because I was able to gently ease it up to my nose.
No, she took me hard and fast.
I think that's the way it happens.
She went straight broke back on me.
And it still wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't, you had warned me how awful it was, and I probably went, okay.
Yeah, because I told you, and you're just like, yeah, mine wasn't that bad. And I'm like, how is it not that bad? Someone just shoved something up near the back, but you had left out that you did it yourself.
Yeah, I did myself because it was a drive-through thing, and they handed it to you and said, okay, stick at least an inch into your nose, and I stuck it like an inch and a half or so, and I felt it getting rattled around like below my eye. But I was much more delicate with myself.
Okay.
And did they rattle yours around, or did they? So I had to put it.
No, she went in and she was just like, boink, you know, and like right when my head shoots back, that's when she, you know, pulled it out. So
I was supposed to put it in and like roll it around, and then put it in the other nostril and roll it around. It sounds like in the hospital, he was like, and stab the brain.
Yep, stab the brain, get whatever you can on the end of it, and then let's go test it.
And okay, well, that's why my experience wasn't nearly as unpleasant as yours.
Okay.
All right. So while you were in the hospital, the VP debate happened.
Yes, it did.
I watched the whole thing. I don't know how much you saw.
It was on. Okay. But I was kind of fading in and out. And it's not because it was boring. I was exhausted. So I only got bits and pieces as it was happening. And then so I had to kind of catch up on, you know, the news and social media after the fact. You know, my sense was, if you are voting for Biden and Harris, you're going to say that Harris, you know, pretty much dominated Pence throughout, with maybe a mild gaffe, you know, somewhere in the middle. And then if you're voting for Trump, you're going to say that Pence won the debate, and you're probably going to say something derogatory about Harris being a bitch or mean or whatever. And, you know, the few people that are in the middle will kind of be kind of split down the middle in terms of who they thought won. You know, I know that Pence was he was staying the party line and just kind of repeating, you know, the same thing kind of over and over again. And I didn't like he's got a very specific role, right? Is to be, you know, Trump is the bad cop, Pence is the good cop, but Pence doesn't say very much. He may put together a lot of words and phrases, but ultimately he's not saying anything, right? He says a lot of nothing. And, you know, just kind of, you know, Trump told a lot of lies and said a lot of things that weren't accurate during the first debate with Biden. You know, and Pence just kind of regurgitated that just with a nicer, more succinct package.
So one thing that he did, and two things about this drive me nuts. One, that he gets away with it. And two, the Democrats haven't figured out a way to counter it. He used the fucking garbage cliche multiple times. You're entitled to your own opinion, but not to your own facts. And it seemed to me like Pence, he said that at least twice. I want to say three times. I remember Mitt Romney saying that to Obama, and I will not disrespect Mitt Romney by comparing him to Mike Pence, because Mitt Romney, while I may not be a fan, I think is an intelligent, articulate man. I think Pence is a dope. But when you use that, he was using that expression literally to buy time to figure out what he wanted to say next, even if it had nothing to do with the issue at hand. And I really want Democrats to say, they've thrown this pitch at us 50 times. Sooner or later, you got to sit back on that and knock it out of the park. I'm not blaming Kamala Harris. I'm blaming the people who set the stage for Democrats in debates. When they go to this lame-ass cliche to buy time, why not step back and go, you've made that comment twice now. You haven't said what facts I haven't discussed. Sit back, and wait for that curveball to bend, and crush it.
And those are the sort of things that need to be done in prep with these candidates.
Yes.
And they're not happening. That was the thing that killed Kamala Harris when she was running as a presidential candidate. It's what I believe kind of hurt Joe Biden a little bit, and a lot of it, really, in the first debate with Trump. And it just, like, they're not doing a good job. I don't like the behind-the-scenes people for the DNC. If Biden doesn't win this election, there's a lot of reasons why. I'm a firm believer that many of your people who are conservative or that are going to vote for Trump, it's much more of a rebuke of the progressive left than it is embracing Trump. And I know that's hard for people on the left to hear, but, I mean, you know, it's just you have some people that just don't believe in, you know, going further left, right? They just don't. And they would rather, and you can call them racist, and you can call them white supremacists, and you can call them whatever, but you're just not appealing to them, right? You're not appealing to them, and, you know, calling them names doesn't resolve it. And then when you turn around and you don't prepare your candidates for, these very predictable statements that, you know, Trump and Pence and whoever are going to throw out, and you have no defense for it, it just leads me to believe that you're just not prepared for this, right?
It's snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Right,
right now, everything is coming towards you. You're Mr. Win, baby, and I'm with you on that. And when I see this going on, I was very frustrated because they let that, you know, pitch we've seen multiple times get past us. And when Biden, in debate number one, Biden gets asked, will you support stacking the courts, which basically means, will you support changing the construction of the Supreme Court
by adding members
because you feel like, well, the Republicans have stacked the court based on the way things have fallen into place. Will you jack up the Supreme Court? Biden fumbled that horribly.
Yep.
He literally said, if I answer that question, that's all you'll be talking about, so I'm not going to answer it. What the fuck does that mean?
The answer should be unequivocally no.
No.
Right? We're not going to stack the court. We're not going to add members. We have a process. It's in place. It's in the Constitution. Unfortunately, there are consequences to losing elections. We lost multiple elections. We lost control. And so we will deal with the most recent Supreme Court nominee. But once I get into office, if there is another seat to be replaced on the Supreme Court, then I will put someone in that I believe that can help balance it out.
Well, can I go a step further? And if I'm wrong, please correct me, but can an executive even do that? I don't think so. That's got to be a legislative thing, right? Well, so couldn't you just say, no, I won't stack the courts because I can't.
I can't. But, I mean, I think the question is, will he support it if it's brought? I mean, you know, my answer
is better than his.
Your answer is better than his. I think my answer is better than his. I think, these are things that they're just... It's frustrating and it's exhausting, you know, wanting these people to get across the finish line, because I've said it multiple times that I just don't believe in Trump's leadership, right? Like, I've had 4 years to do it. You say, well, he's done these things. I'm like, those aren't good things. Well, yes, he is. That tax reform is great. I don't think it's great. you know, well, he's done this and he's deregulated this. I think a lot of that deregulation is bad.
I think a lot of it's terrible.
You know, I mean, like, oh, I'm immigration. Like, what has he done? Like, I mean, immigration was already going down. You know, people want to talk about employment numbers. We already know about the trend that was set before Trump got in the office. And it was obviously very fragile because once the pandemic hit, all that got reversed, you know? And you know, the handling of the pandemic. So all that's been litigated many times. But what gets frustrating is when you have the Democrats and they constantly continue to just step on their own dick over and over and over and over again. And you're like, pick it up and put it in your pants, right? And zip your fucking pants up and you'll stop fucking stepping on it. Right. But they're just like, no, fuck you. We're going to do it our way. This is the way we're going to do it. We're going to win. It's like, all right. And it gets exhausting constantly, you know, like, I mean, because unfortunately, we don't have control. Like, I'm not close enough to the Democratic Party to have any influence. Right. And so it's just really, it's frustrating. And I guess, you know, the rebuttal to me would be like, well, why don't you get involved or whatever? And okay, fine. I should, maybe, I guess, but I'm not. And so sitting here and watching it from this vantage point, it's just a bang your head on the wall sort of deal.
To me, it's like the Democratic Party wants to not offend anyone. So they won't say, no, we're not going to change the construction of the Supreme Court because there are people out there saying what's happened with Merrick Garland, what happened with, you know, Kavanaugh taking that seat, and now with Ginsburg passing away, it's not fair. So we want to change the rules. Well, you did that with a supermajority in terms of getting Supreme Court justices nominated,
right,
and it bit you in the ass.
Well, that's,
and people,
yes,
don't see,
exactly,
it, and they just won't fucking.
Well, I mean, in terms of the court packing, like, you're thinking in the moment right now. You're thinking like a child, right? Like my 6-year-old daughter. My daughter wants something right now, so she's willing to give something up. Like if I say, hey, Eden, you need to clean your room, or let's say, so my daughter wants a TV in her room.
Okay.
Right? And for her, I tell her, I'm like, look, if you want a TV in your room, you got to sleep in your own bed. Right? So what is it? Do you want a TV in your room, or do you want to sleep in bed with me? And she's like, I want to sleep in bed with you tonight. Like, well, if you do, then you don't get a TV in your room. Well, I really want to sleep with you tonight. So I don't want a TV in my room. Okay. So she'll, you know, jump in bed and get her iPad and she'll lay with me and fall asleep. And then eventually I'll carry her, put her in her room, fine, whatever. And then the next day she wants a TV in her room. Right. And I'm just like, well, no, listen, we're doing like you, in order to do this, you need to do that. You want the thing right now, as opposed to doing the hard, like take the next step, sleep in your own bed, and you do it. So I think I made it easy too. I said like seven nights. You do it 7 nights in a row. I'll put a TV in your room, right? Like TVs are cheap. I could do it easy.
$200,
right? Yeah. But she won't. Like she just won't. Like anyway.
The bad news is that your daughter is probably more logical and adult thinking than the
true. I mean,
and
my daughter knows. My daughter knows eventually she'll break me. Right. Well, like she's that. Not there's like she's never going to sleep bed. Like she's never going to sleep in her bed. And eventually she's going to get a TV in there anyway, which I don't know why I'm going to do, because she's never going to watch it because she's always in my fucking bed. But anyway, and that wasn't a great example. But the whole point is that the Democratic Party is so focused on the right now. Right. Like they're pissed about Amy Comey Barrett. They're pissed about Merrick Garland. They're pissed about Kavanaugh. They're pissed about all this, all these sort of things. And so the only thing that they could see is the right now, and the only way to fix it right now is just to add more people. Well, guess what? You add more people. Let's say you win this election, and you add more people, right? You better hope, if you do that, that you've got the Senate, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, because if you don't flip the Senate,
right?
I mean, because I mean, well, now here's the thing: if you flip the Senate, or if you don't flip the Senate, then I mean, you're not going to be able to pack the court anyway. Right, I mean, so they're making some big assumptions in terms of how much control they're going to have. Like, in order to do what they want to do, they need a super majority in terms of, you know, Congress, Senate, and the presidency. And so I think they need to take they're putting the court the cart before the horse in a lot of different ways. But here's the deal: even if you're able to do it, the problem is at some point you're not going to be in power. Right. At some point, you're not going to be in power. And the way Supreme Court nominations go and getting to pick the, like, it may not happen with Joe? And what if Joe is only one term and then you'd lose? Like,
all right, Joe, if he elected, will be a one-term guy. He'll right, be 81 I mean, at the end of his term.
At the end of his term, right? Like, I mean, two, so, maybe. So I mean, you know, Kamala would be the
most... comment, sure.
Yeah, the most sensible to you know, to run and jump in his place. But, like, if you don't win that, then what happens if you... If you're, let's say in that 4 years, you're able to expand the court, right? You get people seated, right? But then, you know, a couple other people retire or something unfortunate happens and someone dies, right? But now Republicans are back in control, right? And then they're able to shift it back in their favor, right? Like, you can't just keep expanding the court every time you lose a seat, right? I mean, at some point in time, like, I mean, unfortunately, like, this is the way it's set. Now, people have said, well, we need term limits for the judges, and it shouldn't be a lifetime, and it shouldn't be this and that. I mean, I disagree. I disagree. I think it should be for life. Because
you can't have Supreme Court justices running for office.
Well, I think what they're saying is, you know, you are there for so many years, whether it's 10 years or whatever, and then you just, it's not something you would run for, you just, your term is done.
That term poorly, but my point is, they need to not be worried about political environments. They need to do their job, uphold the law, uphold the Constitution.
Right.
And frankly, they have done a relatively good job. I mean, Kavanaugh and Roberts.
Gorsuch,
as I was drawing a blank on.
You know,
stuck to their principles,
right? I mean, and you've got your Clarence Thomas, and you've got your Alitos, and everything else. But the reality is, you know, for the most part, the Supreme Court has done a pretty decent job with being just.
Yes.
Now,
and respecting one another, I think in the court,
right.
They are generally tremendously cordial and logical.
It's funny, and that brings up something. You know, one of my friends is really progressive, and she says, you know, I don't think it's cute at all that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was friends with Justice Scalia, right? That just doesn't sit well with me. Like, bitch, no one gives a fuck what sits well with you. These two people work together. They work in close proximity together for years, for decades. They are. Right, like they're intellectually on the same plane. They're in a very isolated fraternity of American history, right? Yeah. And American politics. And so yes, they're going to be close, and yes, they're going to embrace each other. And their ability to have a relationship, even though they were so diametrically opposed, is an example that we all need to follow, right? This whole thing where if you don't think like I do politically, then not only do I disagree with you politically, but I don't think that we can be friends. We as family members, I'm not going to talk to you. And frankly, I don't think that you should exist, right? Like, I should be able to silence you across the board. This whole thing where if you don't agree with me politically, I want you to lose your job, and I want you to lose money, and you should be boycotted, and all that other shit. Like, that is so bad.
Yeah, very detrimental to making the country a better place.
Right. I mean, and ultimately, I have to wonder, for some of these progressives, like, what do you actually want? Right? What do you actually truly want? You say you want justice. You say you want equity. You want equality. You just want what's yours. Is that true? Right? Or do you just want the power so that you can do unto others what they did to you, right? So do you really want justice? Do you really want equity? Or do you want revenge? Or do you want to be the ones in control, telling people what they can and can't do, when they can do it, where they can do it, how they can do it? And is that ultimately what you want? Because if that's what you want, you got a problem, right? You will have a problem, because you're going to get pushback. And I've said this before, a lot of these progressives, they use fighting words, and I don't know if they are prepared to actually fucking fight. You know, I mean, I don't know if they, and I don't mean like a fight on the street. I mean, like, there are people out there who are willing to wage a fucking war over their beliefs of what this country should or should not be. And the question is, are you ready? Are you ready to die? Right? What was the name of Biggie's album? Best one he ever made. Ready to Die. I just gave it to
you. Okay, thank you.
But,
okay, good.
You know, are you ready to die for this
shit? I was like, get rich or die trying.
You know, I mean, like, because some of these people, like, they talk a big game and they want to go out there and protest and they talk about how they risk their lives because of the police, blah, 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 blah. Like, listen, the police aren't going to fucking kill you, right? The police kill about 1,000 people a year, which is too many, but that's a drop in the fucking bucket. But there are people out there who have no problem wiping your ass off the face of the fucking earth. So the question is, are you really like, when I'm talking about ready to die, I'm talking about 1964 with fucking police dogs attacking you and water hoses attacking you and people ready to shoot you and kill you and burn you in your house or in your church. Are you ready to die like that? Because I think the answer for a lot of these people is no. They talk a big game, but they're not prepared for it, and they continue to go down this road, but I don't think they're willing to back it up, and that's problematic to me. Right, and I'm not saying that they need to push.
That's pretty dark, bro.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you're not willing to do that, then you better be able to fucking compromise. You better be able to come to the table, and you better be able to build relationships with people that you may not necessarily agree with. Because if you can't, and it's all fuck you, you got to do it my way or the highway, then those motherfuckers are may choose something other than your way and other than the highway.
Right.
And then what?
All right. I mean, I see what you're saying. And again, that. Came off pretty dark, but I hear what you're saying.
But I'm not wrong. And listen, in Michigan, those dudes were prepared to die, right? Those dudes were prepared to do some shit that nobody on the progressive left was really, really about.
Which, right? By the way, is good that they're not. But
no, it's very good that it's not. But that's the mindset of those fucking people.
Set the table, or let me.
So
do it.
You there were 13 individuals, seven specifically that were putting together a plot to kidnap and or kill the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer, over her orders around COVID and locking down the state. And the FBI was able to foil it, and they arrested them. I think seven are under state charges, and then six are under federal charges, right, or vice versa. But this is very serious. And I saw some of the notes from the FBI and some of the different plans that they had. One of the plans was, well, hey, someone just go knock on the door. When they open the door, just shoot her, right? And then they had planned to, you know, basically rush the state house with, you know, weapons and explosives and, you know, take over the state. And they really wanted to take the state over, see the government fall, and then, you know, I'm not sure how far they thought that we were going to get. I mean, I'm not saying it was a good...
I'm willing to guess they haven't thought this all the way through.
Right. But, I mean, listen, you got weapons... Like, once you bring weapons and you bring explosives in and you're talking about government officials, and, I mean, they were practicing,
That's a coup.
Right. I mean, it's literally a coup to take it over. And so that's what you're up against, right?
Yeah.
The progressive left. That's what you're up against.
Right.
And so I'm not saying you need to be willing to do that. I'm not saying you should want to do that.
Hopefully you're saying don't do that.
What I'm saying is don't do that.
Other side,
but
yes.
But if you want a seat at the table, then you need to be willing to come to the table, sit down, and actually work with people who don't necessarily agree with you. Right? Like, not everyone's gonna agree with you on every point, and that's where progressives get really fucked up, is they will, if you don't agree with our views on LGBT, if you don't agree with our views on black people and Black Lives Matter, and if you don't agree with our views on the Green New Deal and pro-choice and universal health care and, you know, forgiving student loans and free college, then we're not coming to the table. And frankly, we're not going to vote. And you should have voted for Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And it's just
Democrats,
like,
eating their own is something we've talked
right.
about.
Right. I mean, and they do it all the time. But the issue is, it's just like, all right, well, one, then you're not really here to negotiate with anybody. You know, you just want everything that you want. And because you're not willing to negotiate, that's fine. But in order to get what you want, like, you're going to have to do something pretty extreme, which I don't think you have the gumption to do. So you might want to find a different way of getting there. Besides this, you need to do everything our way. And if not, we're going to stomp our feet and turn our backs.
Right. And I mean, I said this related to the COVID response, but it kind of applies here too. There are certain things you can't do half-assed. Now, I'm not suggesting armed revolution. I don't want that at all by the left or the right. But if you're going to talk a big game and march and do all this shit, you better have your ducks in a row, and you better be able to decide what you want and what is important and what is negotiable.
Right.
And, I mean, we could go on for hours right. about that. But the fact is, there were a group of militiamen who I could comfortably call potential domestic terrorists who were...
They are domestic terrorists. There's no potential about...
They were unsuccessful.
It doesn't matter. They're still domestic. What they okay. were planning all right, to all right. do...
Yeah.
Like, listen, right. I mean, like...
Think about how crazy that is.
Well, but think about that. I mean, think about if you... I mean, like, listen, they are domestic terrorists because if you come across this group of people and they just all happen to be Muslim and they were all training and doing all this shit somewhere in Afghanistan with pictures of President Trump or even... Even if everything were the same except they were Muslim extremists doing this shit in Afghanistan or somewhere else, or even if they were doing it here, we would be calling them terrorists.
True.
We wouldn't be saying True. Anything about potential maybe if, ands, or buts about it, they would be terrorists. These men are terrorists. They are domestic terrorists that wish to bring harm to the government of the United to the state in the United States, and they are terrorists.
I said that badly because I agree. I'm just saying that fortunately they were stopped before anything really bad happened because governors do not have the level of protection that presidents do.
Not at all.
And, I mean, they have state troopers. They have, you know, in this case, you got to give a lot of credit to the state troopers of Michigan and the FBI because I'm really glad we're talking about a thwarted plot
yes.
rather than a dead governor. How fucking crazy would it be if, I mean, we live in Ohio, if Mike DeWine got shot because he asked people to wear masks, even though politically Mike DeWine and I do not align on much, I think he's been a good governor and I think he's been, you know, trying to do what best he can to protect the constituents in his state. And there's people calling for his arrest, calling yeah. him... there's a state senator who's... I wish I had the information in front of me, but he's literally calling for Mike DeWine to be charged with crimes against humanity because he's going to lock down businesses and put in mandates.
Well, and DeWine has come out and said he's not going to lock the state down again. The numbers
and
are...
Even when he didn't really lock... I mean, it was tough, but... He did the right thing, in my opinion.
He probably should have went further with it. Like, I mean, it should have been further and stricter, and a lot of states should have gone further and stricter with it. And
early say, on, and then right. maybe 3 weeks later, we wouldn't be dealing with the shit 8 months later.
Right. I mean, which is kind of why Amy Acton, our health director,
right.
stepped down because she said, "Listen, this is what we need to do, and if you guys aren't going to do it, that's fine." But I don't want my name on it because the numbers are going to go back up and you're going to see it and you're not going to listen to me, so why should I be in this position?
And they threatened her life.
And they did. I mean, they threatened her life. They went to her house. They were calling her, you know, anti-Semitic names because her and her family are Jewish. So she ends up stepping down. And there was just a report this week that in Ohio, the numbers for COVID are back to where they were. There's more, you know, positive tests than there were back in March. Now, a lot of that is there's more testing now.
True.
A lot of our issues are in the jails and in the prisons. So those numbers are skewing things. Obviously, the nursing homes are still a hot spot in Ohio. So those are also skewing the numbers. But the numbers are what they are. So we're kind of back where we were in terms of the amount of people with the virus. And so now we're at that point where we're going to have to just live with it. And you know, the best solution that we have is social distancing and wearing masks.
Yeah. You know? Which, by the way, if people did... All right, you know what? I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
Sticking with politics, the next presidential debate was supposed to be this week.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. The Trump team said, we will not do a virtual debate, which I kind of want to delve back into the SCOTUS thing in a minute, but they said they won't do a virtual debate because they can shut things off and whatever. And then Biden said, fine, we'll do some town halls. And the Trump team said, no, we want a debate. Now the debate's been canceled. I think this has been a colossal fuck-up by the Trump crew because the Trump crew needs to change the tide. Right now, the tide is totally towards Biden-Harris. Now, I will also say, as we've discussed earlier in today's conversation, that at times I feel like the Biden-Harris team is trying to find ways to fuck up this victory.
Yes.
And
I don't even feel comfortable with you saying that. Like, I hate that you fuck up the... I mean... They're definitely screwing things up.
Okay, so you don't feel comfortable saying it because I'm right?
No. I just, you know, it's like the whole counting your chickens before the eggs are hatched sort of deal.
Oh, okay, saying that, that they're that far ahead. I mean, all right, the polls did what they did in 2016, but right now...
Well, the polls, again, were accurate in 2016. That's the thing. The polls were accurate. It's just that where they, you know, it was just how those polls were. No. How they were broken up. Where were the people? Right. I mean, the numbers were right. It's just that a lot of the people polled were in places that were already going towards Hillary Clinton. Right. New York, California, you know, a Northeast Ohio, which is always going to be blue, here in Cuyahoga County. And, you know, places like that, you know, were heavily weighted in those polls. So the polls weren't necessarily wrong. It's just that where
they weren't
truly
representative. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think there's a lot of question marks in some of your, what we call flyover states in, you know, the further west Midwest, of kind of what's really happening out there, what's really happening in Texas and what's really happening down in Florida. Because that's where this is going to be won. I don't even know if I don't think Ohio is going to be as much in the mix. I really think states like Iowa, Wisconsin,
Michigan,
Florida, Pennsylvania, Texas, like...
Well, the fact that Texas is in the conversation is interesting.
Yeah.
Because years ago.
They weren't, but I mean, it's definitely worth... I think they're definitely in the conversation now. It seems like they may be shifting more towards Trump for a number of different reasons, but I think they're still worth keeping an eye out. As we go through this process.
And part of that is changing demographics. A lot of people are flocking to Texas because of their tax laws. And I mean, Austin, Austin, Texas is liberal as fuck.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because, you know, Texas does not have a state income tax, right? Neither does Florida. And so, and a lot of your states along the mid-Atlantic don't either, or they have very favorable tax laws. So you see these wealthy, very progressive liberal people leaving these expensive states like New York, like California, and then they're going to places like Texas and Florida, and their political influence is being felt. The question is, how much is it being felt? And what does that do for this election? And those are questions that are yet to be answered. If anyone tells you that they know, then, you know,
they're lying.
So
one thing that I want your opinion on, because the Supreme Court nomination is something that, well, two things I want to talk to you about. One of them, on Friday last week when Trump was admitted to Walter Reed, I was watching Tucker Carlson. And Tucker Carlson's talking and he goes, and I've just been informed that that Chuck Schumer has tweeted that we should postpone the Supreme Court nomination until the president's situation has been resolved. And my knee-jerk reaction was, Chuck Schumer, you fucking idiot. The president's been in the hospital for 5 hours. It's a Friday night. Nothing you say or do now on a Friday night is going to matter until at the earliest Monday morning. So why would you do this? And I went on Twitter to call him out. And I couldn't find the tweet. Because I don't think it ever existed.
It probably didn't.
And then I realized, so I called Tucker Carlson a liar. Then I realized, technically, he probably didn't lie. He said, I have been told that Chuck Schumer tweeted this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure someone said those words. I'm also going to bet that they were coached to say, I'm saying this to you, whether it is factual or not. Which is a bullshit move that Fox News has been getting away with for years. But when it comes down to confirming a Supreme Court nominee, Chuck Schumer was saying we should postpone this and it looked politically convenient for him to do that. And
which Chuck Schumer didn't say.
Right. And you are, Mr. Elections have consequences, and the fact that she probably will get confirmed is because elections have consequences and they're following the rule of law and fucking deal with it. I don't like it. You don't like it, but it is what it is. Having said that, if they cannot have a full Judiciary Committee meeting on this nomination because of COVID, not only do elections have consequences, so do actions. And if your actions caused this whole situation to get as fucked up as it is, and you can't get a proper Supreme Court nominee hearing, then you need to sit back and wait because...
What's the risk to the hearing?
Because I think three of the people on the Judiciary Committee are in quarantine. They can't be.
Oh, right.
And so if you can't have the Judiciary Committee together because, oh, COVID, because the president had these things. And
gotcha.
Then, you know, actions have consequences too.
You know
what's
funny?
Too.
I wanted to bring this up earlier. You know, you said you had your thing that you were going to do, but you didn't want to put other people at risk because you weren't sure if you had COVID or not, so you got a test. You know, what's interesting is that, so Trump came to the debate here in Cleveland and, you know, refused to, you know, there was... Got there too late to have a test. They wouldn't say if he was, like, when the last time he had been tested. A lot of the people on his team didn't wear a mask and just kind of did not take other people's safety serious with the whole COVID thing. And then there's questions about did they know that he was at that point in time positive for COVID? Because, like, if you remember, there was a debate, and then, like, a day or two later is when the news came out that he had it. So he would have been positive at the debate, and chances are if he took a test, he would have shown that he was positive.
Sure.
You know, given the way his symptoms, what his symptoms were, you know, that Monday or Tuesday. And so I guess that's just something else that I think is not, the media is beating that drum, but I don't think people are really taking into account, you know, the number of things that went wrong there. Right. And they're all on the president and his team. And it's just kind of a microcosm of how they've handled this entire COVID situation from the get-go. Right. In terms of, you know, not really having the greater good in mind and not really taking the proper steps when they should have and saying one thing in public and doing something else behind the scenes. Like they just... for whatever reason, they're pushing hard back against this, and it's frustrating to see, right? I mean, like, they're just doing it real time, right in front of your face, you know, lying about this and being very, very deceptive about something that you know, listen, Trump on the one hand says he's not worried about COVID, it's not that big of a deal, it's not even as bad as the flu, but yet also... you know, was taking a drug that wasn't even approved by the FDA.
Getting emergency flighted
getting
to Walter Reed
and everything else. Now, some people suspect that his symptoms were much worse than what he let on. I don't know if that's true, but I do think just knowing Trump as a germaphobe and knowing Trump as, you know, the narcissist that he is, I think that he was in a situation where he does know how dangerous COVID is. He admitted it on the tapes with...
Woodward.
With Bob Woodward. And so I think that he freaked out and was just like, listen, I don't care if it's FDA approved or not. Give me the thing that's going to work best to make sure that I don't end up like, you know, some of these other people that died, especially the older people. I think he knows the basics of it. And so for him to, on the one hand, get himself, you know, to get flown to Walter Reed, take this drug, you know, and then... you know, go, but then right before that, he's, you know, showing up at the Cleveland Clinic, not wearing a mask and refusing to say whether he's positive or negative. I mean, just the contrast and just the lack of respect and deference towards, you know, the people that you were supposed to be leading and, you know, your constituents, right? Because you're everyone's president, right? You're the president of the United States. So, you're Joe Biden's president. You're, you know, the staff at the Cleveland Clinic. You're your
the
staff.
President of Whiskey Congress.
Right. Like, he's our president, and yet he just blatantly put people's lives at risk just because he didn't like the way it may make him look.
Right.
You know, I mean, I guess I'm assuming there, but.
And I also thought that I have never, in my recollection, had less faith in what I was getting delivered to me as news regarding the presidency than that stretch of time from when he was admitted to Walter Reed until now. I honestly, Steve, I still don't know what I believe.
Well,
I don't know if he's getting
now
pumped
that's
with
fair.
IV fluids or...
Well, that's fair, but I think, you know, I mean, our country, with our leaders and our presidents, we have a history I mean, going as far back as Woodrow Wilson and
no, hiding troop.
You know what I mean? Of yeah. hiding what their medical state is, right? I mean, whether it's Woodrow Wilson or FDR or Kennedy or Reagan. You know, I mean, we've had a number of presidents that have had serious issues. You know, I was just listening to a story. There was a historian telling, and I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Grover Cleveland, who had to have emergency surgery to get tumors removed out of his mouth. So he went to a friend's yacht, right, and said it was supposed to be a poker game. And, you know, had these surgeons and orthodontists and dentists come out, and they removed the tumor out of his mouth and made him an implant and all that other stuff. But they did it. They were out there for like 5 days. And then everyone's like, what are you guys doing out there? And they said, oh, it was just a poker trip or whatever on this yacht, you know, out far enough where you could see it, but you couldn't really see what was going on. So this is not uncommon for a president to go out of their way to hide and lie with right. their health. Like that so much wasn't a big deal. I mean, everybody's freaking out about it. Which they rightfully should, but for me, that's not a huge deal because
it's not that big a break from
right.
history.
It's not even the first time it's happened in my or our lifetime, right?
And it happened way before,
right?
Our
and
lifetime.
It's happened, you know, with multiple presidents along the way. But I guess where I am a little just taken aback is just by the president's complete lack of like, and it's not a surprise, but just how he approached, you know, that 24-hour period, you know. Going in, and it feels like you have to know that you were positive before you made the announcement, right? And just how right. he kind of turned it into a reality show sort of moment and went out and, oh, I got to greet all my fans and all. It's just, I don't like the way the guy leads. I think he's a bad leader, and I don't feel that he should be the guy running the show.
And I just, as a Democrat, I just don't want to see us manage to find a way to lose to this fucking guy. I mean, again. There's so many, again, right. All right, man, there's a couple of more lighter issues I'd like to talk about just to have sure. some fun. We haven't got to hang out. I mean, you were in the hospital. I've dealt with my shit and yes. I've been the healthiest guy. So I put this in our prep, Slack file. Someone defaced Donald Trump's Hollywood star while dressed as the Incredible Hulk. Now, I should not find this
it
as
was
funny
not me.
As I, it was not you. You have an alibi.
I have a legit alibi.
But you know what? I'm going to buy some green spray, some skin safe spray paint, and I'll buy the pickaxe. Apparently someone took a pickaxe dressed like yes. a Hulk, and I want to know who would have the balls to try to stop that.
Right.
You've got a guy hulked up.
Slamming a pickaxe at the Hollywood star.
Anti-vandalism, and I know that it's going to cost the Hollywood whatever the money to fix it. It won't cost Trump, but the visual of that is so hilarious to me that I can't help but bring it up. So I'm not condoning what was done. That may have been Freudian, but I find that hysterical. And it hasn't gotten nearly as much coverage as it should.
Right.
But I also find it funny that the Proud Boys, who you and I have both expressed our lack of fondness for, have now been called out by the gay crowd, calling themselves the Proud Boys, and took over the hashtag Proud Boys hashtag on Twitter, and showing dudes making out with each other on Twitter, hashtag Proud Boys. I don't like watching dudes make out with dudes. Do it. Do your thing. I don't give a shit. Not my thing, but the fact that Gavin McInnes and those douchebags are being taken over by that, also fucking hilarious to me.
Yeah.
And by the way, they're more manly than you, Gavin McInnes, you douche.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. You know, I mean, and you know, it was good natured. And, you know, it's just a dig at the Proud Boys and you know, and their bullshit. So, you know, hopefully they take it in stride and don't try to do anything dumb about it. But
well, they do a lot of dumb things. You're, right. That's a good point. I hopefully no violence comes of it.
Yeah.
But the concept is hilarious.
Thought
to
it
me.
Was very funny.
All right, so a little sports talk if we can.
Yes.
The NBA Finals Game 6 is coming up.
Yeah.
The LA Lakers with LeBron James, who mm-hmm. I'm cheering for.
Okay, so here's a little personal thing. I like the underdog usually. But there's a guy on the Miami Heat. His name is Jay Crowder. And Jay Crowder is a guy that I can't fucking stand.
I know this.
Right? Like, so he, like, Jay Crowder played for the Celtics for a while. And he, you know, was one of those scrappy guys that, especially when the Celtics played the Cavs, like, he just was all in LeBron's face. And he had the game, like, career games against the Cavs, even though the Cavs would beat them and the Cavs would go on to the finals and, you know, end up winning. And, you know, back in 2016. But Jay Crowder ended up somehow getting traded to the Cavs.
I remember this. I remember talking.
Right.
This was part of the Kyrie Irving deal.
Yeah.
I was in Frederick, Maryland, talking to you on the phone, and you were literally swallowing your pride saying, I hated this fucking guy, but he's a defensive stud. He's on our team now. I'm flipping the script. And then he came to Cleveland and did shit.
Right. Like, I mean, he just, like, he played like absolute ass. He was a crybaby. He was really bad in the locker room. And, I mean, and this isn't just, like, my ill will towards him. I mean, these are people that I know that work for the team that are saying, like, this guy, we got to get him out of here. He is just, he is a brat. Like, I don't know why he's so entitled. He's never won anything, blah, 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 yada, yada. So they get him out. And then he ends up on, you know, another team and goes back to his normal self. So now I'm just like, you know what? Fuck you, you gutless piece of shit. You come to my team and you completely shit the bed. And it's what? Just because you don't like Cleveland or you don't like LeBron or whatever? So I hate that fucking guy. And now he's on the Heat. So I, like, I can't root for the Heat. I'm just like, sorry, I hope the underdog fucking loses. Get, like, I wanted them to get swept. I really wanted the Lakers to close them out on Friday. Especially wearing the Kobe Black Mamba jerseys. I thought that would have been really badass if they would have been able to close that out. You know, doing it for Kobe. Because those jerseys, like, I'm not a huge Laker fan.
I'm not a Laker fan at all.
Right. And, I always loved Magic Johnson, so I can't, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Yep. So I can't say I hate the Lakers. But I just thought those black jerseys with the snakeskin, like, light snakeskin print are just ridiculous. See,
this is a bit personally because when my dad was mad at me as a kid playing basketball, he would call me James Unworthy. As a joke, like James Worthy. And so I like James Worthy, and my dad would call me James Unworthy. Oh,
that's hilarious.
kind of was.
What a dick move by dad.
But, yeah, kind of, but he can be that way sometimes.
But yeah, so I'll be rooting for the Lakers. I have no problem rooting for LeBron. Again, he brought a championship to Cleveland. I like Anthony Davis a lot. Like, that dude is just something different. So I have no problem rooting for the Lakers, and hopefully they are able to close it out tonight and send Miami home and end this weird NBA bubble thing.
Is it ending the weird NBA bubble thing? I look forward
to it. But the question is, when does it start again, and do they have to start again in the bubble if they start? Like, because when are they going to start the regular season again?
I mean, the regular season would normally be starting roughly about now.
Right now, yeah. So,
what a weird world.
You know, do they just, you know, everybody get to go home for a little bit and then, you know, they try to get things started, you know, around Christmas or December.
Hockey is talking about restarting in mid-December, and they ended about 3-4 weeks ago.
Who won the Stanley Cup?
Tampa Bay.
Oh fuck. Yeah, I think so. I totally lost interest. My team sucks so bad.
I'm not a huge hockey fan.
Tampa and Dallas were in the finals, and I hate both those teams. I'm 99% sure Tampa won, but frankly, I gave no fucks. And I'm a huge hockey fan.
Right.
I was just so bitter. What's interesting?
So the Stanley Cup viewership was down 61%, which is massive. Which, I mean, you anticipate it's all going to be down. It's just a weird year, and it's a combination of COVID and then the way cable, people are running away from cable so that they can pay $10 more a month than their regular cable bill to have all these streaming services, right?
Sure.
You got Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus and HBO Max and all that other stuff, and then your internet, and then the next thing you know, you're paying $180 a month again, and it's just like, wait, what happened? So, anyway.
Yeah. And the NHL is a fringe sport. I'm a huge fan growing
right
up in Buffalo.
But my point is, I think it's interesting that a lot of people are being very demonstrative about how they're not watching the NBA and they're not watching the NFL, and, you know, now these leagues are going to learn that they're nothing without us, and I found all these great things to do with my time now because I don't need the NBA and NFL. Okay, cool. Go do your fancy things. I'm not sure why you have to make a big deal about it, but I just think it's interesting that no one really made a big deal about not watching hockey. And no one, like if the NFL ratings drop a point, then Breitbart and every conservative outlet out there is like, man, the NFL ratings dropped a point. The NFL is done. It's over, right? I mean, but like no one's saying that about hockey, and hockey has something seriously to be concerned about if viewership fell off 61%, right? So I just think it's interesting.
The NHL's marketing has been historically awful for literally two decades.
Yeah, yeah.
But your point is taken. But in terms of the NFL, for all the conservative people take a knee and we're sending a message. You and I went to the Buffalo Bills backer bar a couple weeks ago because your Steelers weren't playing. Weren't a lot of empty seats.
There were no empty seats.
And by a lot, I mean none.
Right. I mean, there were no empty seats for...
And that team was on local TV.
It was on local TV, and it was for a Buffalo Bills team, people watching in Cleveland.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, so, and I mean, it was full. So this idea that, you know, the NFL is dying, no, it's not. I mean, I think the NFL does have an issue with their game in that it's just better viewed on TV than in person.
I agree with that.
Even when I go to live games, I usually find a place where, like, I can watch it on TV in the fucking stadium. So... it's something that the NFL is going to have to try to figure out over time. And I'm sure there's someone in a back room somewhere doing all the metrics in terms of, you know, these games without fans and trying to figure out how to kind of merge what people are doing right now with, you know, having people still able to come to the stadiums. And I think what you'll see in this next wave are these stadiums that, like, you see out in LA and Dallas where there's not a ton of seats. Right, like you're gonna have less seats, but there's gonna be more to do.
More luxury,
right?
More
just
whatever.
So much more shit to do: luxury, kids, family, shopping, bars, restaurants, nightclubs, all that stuff. I think that's kind of like the direction that they will have to go.
No, I agree. That's the biggest risk, is because people are gonna realize. I've said it for years. I would rather be in an energized sports bar with good TVs, good sound, and passionate fans around me, and pay $5 for a beer
as opposed to 12. 15, yeah.
While spending $40 to park and making my whole day revolve around getting to and from a stadium. I get it. I love the energy. I'm glad people do that, but I enjoy my game day much more
right.
when it's a 4-hour commitment and $5 a beer versus a full day.
Yeah. I mean, it's just really expensive to go to NFL games anymore.
Any sporting event.
Right. Yeah.
Even baseball. I'm going to beer.
Baseball's not too bad. Yeah, you're right. But you know, any pro sporting events, it's definitely costly.
And we got to wrap things up. But yeah. we've skipped a lot of in memoriam over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So Eddie Van Halen passed away at 65 from cancer. I will be the first to admit Eddie Van Halen was a virtuoso guitarist. I was never a big fan of the band, but he's gone too soon, and is making a lot of people look back and appreciate him as a musician.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Van Halen was an amazing guitarist. You can't say that he wasn't one of the best all time, if not the best of all time. I mean, the guy literally, like, built his own guitar that then became a very, you know, ridiculous... I mean, it's just crazy, but, you know, some of the things he could do on a guitar, like, I just like, him and Jimi Hendrix, it was amazing. You know, he did a collaboration with Michael Jackson on Beat It.
Right.
And that's his guitar solo.
A lot of people don't know that.
His guitar solo on Beat It. And, you know, it's obviously I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. So, you know, very well aware. But, you know, Eddie Van Halen was just, he's one of those guys who, you have no idea how many different people he touched in the music world. I mean, he's done stuff with LL Cool J. He's done stuff with all sorts of hip hop artists and rap artists. He's just, the guy was remarkable. So we lost a great one with Eddie Van Halen's passing. You know, obviously gone too soon, but you know, definitely will be missed for sure.
And two baseball legends, Bob Gibson and Whitey Ford. I think Bob Gibson was 82 or 83.
Yeah.
And Whitey Ford was 91. Gibson pitched for the St. Louis Cardinals. Whitey Ford, to me, has a little bit of a special place in my heart because I'm so fond of the story around Mantle and Maris. And Whitey Ford was the ace pitcher for the Yankees during that era. And that story is so compelling to me for a bunch of reasons. And I'll spare details just because you can watch the movie 61 asterisk on made by HBO. And if you can't appreciate that, that's on you.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, Bob Gibson, just like a really, truly compelling story. You know, not a ton of black pitchers out there, just throughout the history of the game of baseball. And Bob Gibson was historically good. You know, they literally changed the game because of him. You know, they actually
lowered the mound.
Yeah, they lowered the pitcher's mound because of him. And, you know, it was really intimidating guy. You know, won two World Series. Just if you look up his numbers, just crazy, crazy numbers with strikeouts and wins. And
I believe he won the World Series in 62 or 63, which would have also been with Roger Maris. So Whitey Ford and Bob Gibson would have both won World Series with a Roger Maris team, which Roger Maris is a guy to me who gets a bad rap in history. Because people don't respect how great he was. He was a two-time MVP, won multiple World Series, but people love Mickey Mantle so much they shit on Roger Maris. Yeah. And the fact that he crossed over that, he's the 2 degrees of Kevin Bacon of those two guys.
Yes.
And then one other guy that we didn't talk about, it's been a couple weeks ago since Gale Sayers passed away.
Kansas Comet.
And I traded texts, and you told me how much that hit you personally, and frankly, it shocked me because Gale Sayers retired in like 1970.
Yeah, I obviously I never saw him play. I mean, he was retired before I was born or even thought about.
I was born.
One of the first football movies I ever saw was Brian's Song, which if you haven't seen Brian's Song, then be prepared to just want to gouge your eyes out with sadness. But it was a really compelling story. And so like a lot of things, my dad would say, you know, go back and watch film on this guy or whatever. So you'd bust out the NFL films, VHS tapes and, you know, watch them of Gale Sayers running. And he was probably one of the first running backs that I tried to emulate as a runner. You know, at a really young age, just constantly moving forward, never taking on big hits. But having the speed to get outside and just amazing feet and in a smoothness that I was never able to really fully successfully duplicate. Because
almost no other humans could.
Right. I mean, the dude was just something completely special. I mean, you know, I get drilled on this all the time, but people say, you know, who would you take, Gale Sayers or Jim Brown? And I say Gale Sayers every time. I the dude was just an amazing, amazing running back, and he was a great person. You know, there's no one who's ever met him that just has anything remotely bad to say about him. And, you know, again, if you haven't seen the movie Brian's Song, check it out, and then, you know, maybe it'll give you a certain level of appreciation of just the type of person that he was. But then, you know, the beauty of today is we've got YouTube, so you can look at highlights of him playing football. But, you know, Gale Sayers is definitely a tough loss. You know, he's a little bit older, so this makes more sense than you know, Van Halen. But,
and Brian's Song is a movie that if you watch it now and appreciate it for the fact that the movie probably came out in, I'm going to pull 1977 out of my ass, but it's roughly in that era.
Yeah.
And
it's got a young Billy Dee Williams and a young James Caan.
Let's call him Jimmy Caan at that point, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, and so, you know, it talked about racism. It talked about, mm-hmm. you know, issues that today still aren't fully resolved. But in 1977, that was progressive as fuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brian Piccolo died of cancer and Gale Sayers literally, you know, did everything he could to help his friend, and Piccolo did everything he could to help Gale Sayers come back from injuries. And there's a lot of really touching moments in that movie and powerful moments in that movie. And yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it literally since the mid 80s.
Yeah. I can't watch it just cause it just like,
it's,
you know,
it's heart wrenching.
Right.
Absolutely.
I mean, like a spoiler alert, Brian Piccolo dies. Yeah, and it just, it's hard to watch. And if you ever have, you know, lost someone to cancer, then you know how, you know, it's just a brutal thing to watch someone, you know, get broken down like that. But anyway, that's our, you know, kind of in memoriam catch up, and let's wrap it up.
Let's do that. Thanks for listening. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Reach out to us if you'd like. Thank you for listening. We're done.